Hello, friends from the internet. It is us. We are back another week here in Aleli. How are you guys? Hope you had a nice week. Hope you enjoyed the last episode. And hopefully you will enjoy this one as well. I'm really excited, really pumped to show you this amazing movie. So this is not just a movie, it's an anime movie. I'm really excited, from Studio Ghibli, and it's the one, the only, Princess Mononoke. Mononoke Hime. You know, guys, I love so much this movie that I have a tattoo on my leg about this woman with the wolves. So I'm really pumped. Thank you guys for tuning up. And so let's start with the theme of this week. Also, just for the record, we're starting a new series. So get in the groove and enjoy the new two episodes. So here is the plot. While protecting his village from rampaging Tatarigami, a confident young warrior, Ashitaka, is stricken by a deadly curse. To save his life, he must journey to the forest of the West. Once there, he is embroiled in a fierce campaign that humans were waging on the forest. The ambitious Lady Eboshi and her loyal clan use their guns against the gods of the forest and a brave young woman, Princess Mononoke, who was raised by a wolf god. Ashitaka sees the good in both sides and tries to stem the flood of blood. This is met by animosity by both sides as they each see him as supporting the enemy. So first, guys, we're gonna talk about movie and curiosities. So this movie was released in 1998 in Japan by Studio Ghibli. If you know Studio Ghibli is an animation studio from Japan that is from Miyazaki, so Hayao Miyazaki. And we're gonna talk about how this movie has so many layers. It's like amazing. For me, I'm gonna just tell you what I have researched about it, what I interpreted about it. So that's what we're gonna talk about. We see how in this movie, we want to have a relationship between man and nature. So that's the main goal on this movie. How to balance a human material technological life with nature and be in harmony with it. A great example of this principle is Ashitaka. Ashitaka is the one of the main characters. So he's the guy that has all this curse and travels all to the west to meet the forest gods. He is a clear sign of this balance because he respects not only the human side of him, but also the nature and everyone that is involved. Nature is really like a big part of where he comes from, but the humans as well. And we can see at the beginning in his village that it's really clear that they respect everything around them and they respect themselves. So it's respecting human and nature itself so that they can live in harmony. So he always tries to be in both sides, not only from the people from Iron Town, but also with the gods and the forest in the movie. So you can see him clearly trying to be the bridge between the two sides. Also, a big theme recurrently on this movie and explicitly said by Miyazaki is that he shows the complexity of being human. It's how the world has many layers. It's not all black and white. Normally in children movies, you will see how one thing is evil and then the other one is the good one and how good reigns above evil. But in this movie, we see many layers. Each character has a depth and is not all bad, all good. One clear character that proves this theory is Lady Eboshi. So Lady Eboshi is like the leader from Iron Town. She's the one that founded Iron Town. She's the one that gives Iron Town hope. Because if you see this, Lady Eboshi at the beginning is like, oh, she's the evil one because she's the one destroying the forest. She's the one fighting with the gods. She's the one like creating demons from her fights and creating horrible things. But when we go into Iron Town with Ashitaka, we can see clearly that she's not all evil. She saved people from brothels. So all the girls in the village are saved by Lady Eboshi to live there, and they live nicely and they have really good laws to respect them, and they feel great with her. They feel like she saved them. Also, she respects and helps people with leper. It's really complex, this leper thing, because in the movie, I don't know Japanese, but in my movie, I see it in Japanese with subtitles in Spanish. And in the subtitles in Spanish, they do say that they're lepers. Many people, I imagine from the English translation, they don't say lepers. So they think it's another sickness. But Miyazaki, I think in an interview or in Twitter Q&A, he confirmed that indeed they were lepers. So as you can see, Lady Eboshi is helping people that are in a great sickness, treating them right, treating them with kindness, saving girls from brothels, treating them right, treating them with kindness again. So she's not all bad. She has issues, we will say, but she's not all evil. So that's the part that Miyazaki wanted to reflect, that how a human is complex, is not all bad and not all good. It has its layers, and we are in a gray area, you know? So she's not evil. And in fact, none of the characters in this movie are evil, not even the demons, because the demons are another portrait of what Miyazaki wants to represent. Miyazaki focused not only on the layers of complexity, but also he represents hate and how hate consumes you. That's the big portraying of this movie and the big journey that is happening. For example, Ashitaka is cursed by a god that was consumed by hate and became a demon. That's Nago, the pork god. I don't know how you call that. It's kind of like Pumbaa, but I don't remember the word for it. But well, so Nago gets too much hate towards the humans. He transforms into a hate demon and tries to attack the village of Ashitaka. And Ashitaka, trying to stop him, gets touched by him and he gets cursed. And his curse is literally about hate. And every time there is hate around him, the curse gets crazy and it represents itself by giving more strength or by trying to kill Lady Eboshi at some point. It's just that how the hate is represented on the movie and how hate is the main issue that they are battling. For example, when Nago is killed by Ashitaka's arrow, he comes back to himself because all hate, the little weird thing is that he has on his body that cover all his body, are leaving him, and like hate leaves him and lifts up and he just dies as himself. Okay, one big thing that everyone talks about is towards the end. When the Nightwalker gets back his head, the Nightwalker is also the Shishigami, so the forest spirit, but because the sun lifts up before he turns back to being a deer, he kind of dies. So people were trying to say, hey, maybe he's not dead, because Ashitaka said that he was life itself and he couldn't die. But let me reinterpret this for you. So he does die on that moment when he falls into the ground, but it falls exactly into the forest and all the parts that were damaged, not only by him, but also by the humans. And he gives life back with his body. So it's kind of like a reborn itself from the death of this character, from the spirit. So this spirit gives lives back by dying to the forest. So you can see in, like, how it grows everything back and how everything gets balanced again. You can for sure say that the forest is back to health, because we see towards the end of the movie a little Kodama who is just appearing next to the water, next to the plants. If you see the movie and you see it many times, you can know that Kodama are the life of the forest, the health and the life of the forest. So that means the forest gets back to life. In a sort of way, did not die in vain. He gave back life into the forest. One great thing to know about the movie is that Miyazaki, he had the idea of creating a girl raised by wolves since the 70s. He had changed the history many times, but like he took 15 years to create the movie Mononoke Hime, to put it in motion. Also, one great thing about this movie is the animation. If you see the animation, it's like perfect. So fluid. It looks like so organic, the movements. If you have seen anime, if you see the early 90s anime, they're kind of like choppy, but they still look good. It's just like they are less fluid. But if you see this anime movie from Studio Ghibli, it's amazing. The fluidity of the characters, of the movement, of everything happening, it looks so real. Even the wind happening through the leaves of the forest, it's amazing. It's like, it looks so good. And also, one thing that is great about the animation and how the characters were done is the emotions are really well portrayed in every character, especially the animals. The animals have not a lot of range of movement, if you can see. I imagine they didn't want to go the cartoon part, or they didn't want to go like really far onto Disney, but they did get some expressions, and the expressions were so good because you knew when they were like really sad or really like in a different mood or in rage or something. If you see Moro is the wolf mom, she has really emotions that really were portrayed. She doesn't move a lot her mouth or her eyes or everything. She just gets sometimes really exaggerated ones, but it's just one or two. But the rest of the movie, she's more real movements. It's based on the real movements of a wolf, that's for sure. But you can see her, just the eyes, and you know what emotion she's portraying on that moment. Another thing that happened with this movie is that it got a lot of critics and was really criticized, but not on Japan. Japan was great, they loved it. It was really criticized in the Western world, all American side and all like Occidental world, because they had like really explicit violence. This movie was categorized for all public, so children, adolescents and adults. But I don't find it that bad. Even when I watch it, I did watch it as a kid, it wasn't that horrible. It's like, it didn't feel like, oh my god, this is so horrible, I cannot watch it. And I was a really sensitive kid. So for me, it was not that much gore. It was a few parts, but it showed how it was, how like the movie was, how the message was portrayed. So because of this explicit violence, normally the company that distributed the movie is none other than Disney. And Disney is not happy at all that it has violence and gore elements on the movie. It has really dark themes, kind of like brothels and lepers and all that. So Disney was saying like, no, let's just cut these images off, let's change the movie so that it gets adapted and more commercialized for the Occidental world. And Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki were like, no, we're not doing that, because they already had a big issue with it, Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind. So because of that, Disney went a step back and said, we're not gonna distribute this movie. Like they said, we're not doing it. And I think there's two things to that. The way it's done, Disney is not used to these kind of explicit themes and violence and gore and dark themes being treated in Disney movies. So I think they didn't want their name associated with that kind of movie. And also, Disney had just released Mulan on 1998 as well. So I imagine they didn't want to also release The Princess Mononoke, that is a Japanese movie that is the direct rival with Mulan, that is also based on Oriental culture. I think that's the main thing why Disney didn't want to distribute this movie. At the end, Miramax distributed the movie in 1999, so 1 year later. But curiously enough, Miramax is owned by Disney. I imagine Miramax, it has another ambience, so it's maybe better than being like directly be Disney. Either way, Miramax distributed the movie. That was it. And now we're going to the fun facts. Fun fact number one. Did you know that the forest of the movie is inspired on a real place in Japan? Yes, guys. The forest does exist. It's the Shiratani Unsui in Yakushima. Miyazaki was walking around that area and it got inspired for Mononoke Hime, and it also inspired the forest on Nausicaa. So whenever you go to Japan, try to get to this place. It looks amazing. Fun fact number two. The movie was drawn almost all by hand. So the film has 144,000 animation cells, and more than half were redrawn by Miyazaki himself. That is bonkers. So much time animating and redrawing and drawing this movie. So if you don't know, animation cells are the hand-drawn animation done on celluloid paper. Celluloid paper is kind of like a plasticky, transparent paper that was used a long time ago when animation started. And I said almost all hand-drawn because the movie has tiny pieces made by computer-generated images and 10 minutes of digital paint. And it was the last movie to be drawn in a traditional way. Third fun fact. The movie cost $23 million. It was the most expensive anime in history. That is amazing. Fun fact number four. Miyazaki drew so much in the production of this movie that he had an injury in his hand. He had to wear something on his hand and still draw with it. Poor thing. Fifth fun fact. The Studio Ghibli always is making sure that they don't have any cuts in their movies when putting it to other countries. What I was said before is all because what they experience in Nausicaa. So when Miyazaki heard that Harvey Weinstein, the executive of Miramax at the time, wanted to make cuts to The Princess Mononoke, he sent a katana, an authentic katana, to him with a message that said, no cuts. Hope he took it really bad because it was meant to be, hey, don't touch my movie. Sixth fun fact. Did you know that one sequence of this movie took 2 years to draw? And yes, guys, this scene was the scene from the beginning when Ashitaka is chased by the Tatarigami. The Tatarigami is the demon that follows him. It took a year and 7 months to draw because of all the small snake-like things that he had on his body. And the movement had to be really well done, so it took super long time to do it. Seven fun fact. Weird thing that happened is Western people, Occidental people, said that the title was confusing because it says Mononoke Hime, but not one character is named as Mononoke. But one thing that I found discrepancy here is if you listen to the movie on his original language, Japanese, you can hear that they address San as the Mononoke Hime. They say that in the movie when they talk in Japanese. So it says Mononoke Hime. They put her like that. It means Princess of Vengeance. So guys, one big recommendation from my part is always listen to the original language of the movie you're watching with subtitles. Eighth fun fact. The fans ask Studio Ghibli in the Twitter Q&A the backstory of Lady Eboshi. They said, Miyazaki has said that Eboshi was sold as a slave and became the wife of a leader of pirates. After she became a skilled fighter, she killed him, stole his treasure, and returned to mainland Japan. So that makes a lot of sense on how she became a super badass woman. Ninth and final fun fact. The sound effects of the movie had their own meaning and logic. The sound that the Kodamas made with their heads is made with wooden castanets. As they felt, these spirits should sound like wood, as they have a connection with trees. So it's really logical, has really good things. One of the best sound effects is when San and Lady Eboshi are fighting, as they spend so much time trying to design the sound effects so that the sword of Lady Eboshi sounds completely different than San's dagger, which was made from bone. Good to know!
Well, friends, that's all for this part one of the Mononoke Hime episode. If you want the part two, I'm gonna post it not that far from it, so maybe tomorrow you will get part two. And tune up to know the last little details that I have for you. Symbolism and some Japanese folklore. So tune up! Bye, friends!